Okay, here we go. Got lots of news for you. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. You get text as well, 98973. And 8973, that is the state roofing text line. Two ways to get to us. One of you get a chance to be letter of the day. A great honor. Doesn't really get you anything. Can't put it in the bank. Can't cash it. But you can walk around with your head held high. So tell everybody. Letter of the day. We should have stickers we hand out. We need something else. Don't you need some sort of mouse pads or...
Why? Do we need to improve the quality?
No. But just as a way of saying, hey, thanks a lot for ending the show. And, you know,
that seems like a lot of work.
Okay, you're right. That's the spirit right there. That's the millennial for you right there. That's your millennial.
That got us through the 9 to noon.
I come up with ideas. I'm an idea. I'm 36,000 feet up, Tom. Right? And I drop these like little brilliant bombs. They call them brilliant bombs. Just came up with that as well. All right? That's called a brilliant bomb.
Uh-huh.
And I drop them down.
Uh-huh.
Like the Lufthansa.
Lufthansa. Luftwaffe, maybe?
And I dropped a little brilliant bomb down on him, and what happened? What did he do? He flicked it off his shoulder like a boogie. All right, fine. The president had a chance to speak.
Wow.
Is he still up there? He's still taking questions.
Yeah.
Are they asking him about the coronavirus or other things?
They've mostly stuck to the coronavirus, actually, so far.
Okay, because he was mad. The president was mad. He was ripping the coverage of it. The coronavirus coverage, he says that they're going to have a news conference because a lot of, way behind, you're not doing anything, you're running out of masks, what's the White House, where were you, were in India.
Sluggish response, so he's going to set the record straight.
Blah, 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 blah.
The Johns Hopkins, I guess.
Blah, 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 not to you, Tom, just blah, blah, blah. That seemed disrespectful, and that was not. It was a blah, blah, blah bomb I dropped on you. I didn't mean to do that.
It's a highly respected, great place. They did a study, comprehensive, the country's best and worst prepared for an epidemic. And the United States is now, we're rated number one.
You can also get this on BuzzFeed. They have the same thing. 71 countries not to get a virus in.
We're rated number one for being prepared. This is a list of different countries. I don't want to get in your way.
It's funny that he would bring up the Johns Hopkins connection because Johns Hopkins' website got a lot of attention 2 days ago. Ken Cuccinelli is on the coronavirus task force, and he sent out a tweet. Says, hey, is anybody having a hard time getting on the Johns Hopkins website? Like, I want to see the spread, the international spread, and I can't get through. I can't get onto the website. They go, this guy's on the task force. Uh-huh. He's asking for Twitter help to open up a website. Okay. But that's Ken Cuccinelli for you.
All right. Trump says that Mike Pence has taken over.
What I've done is I'm going to be announcing exactly right now that I'm going to be putting our Vice President Mike Pence in charge. And Mike will be working with the professionals, doctors, and everybody else that's working. The team is brilliant. I spent a lot of time with the team over the last couple of weeks, but they're totally brilliant. And we're doing really well, and Mike is going to be in charge, and Mike will report back to me, but he's got a certain talent for this.
Okay, yeah, he knows because he's got a talent.
Specific set of skills.
As a former governor from the state where the first MERS case emerged in 2000.
What's that?
That's Pence.
Pence, yeah.
2014. I know full well the importance of presidential leadership, the importance of administration leadership, and the vital role of partnerships of state and local governments and health authorities in responding to the potential threat of dangerous infectious diseases. And I look forward, Mr. President, to serving in this role and bringing together all the members of the Corona Task Force that you've established.
Okay, task force.
Including Ken Cuccinelli.
Okay, fine. Trump took a question.
The CDC said yesterday that they believe it's inevitable that the virus will spread in the United States, and it's not a question of if, but when. Do you agree with that assessment?
Okay, I have to say
he was disputing it earlier.
I have to say, I'm one of the 60-some million that voted against Hillary Clinton and voted for him. He doesn't handle this well.
Oh, you already?
I'm just setting you up.
Are you just guessing, or you already
heard
the answer?
Already. Jacob cut it, sent it over. Hold on.
Why do you get to preview the cuts and I don't?
Just make sure they're all there. There's no curse words. Right. So
okay.
I'm just going to say right now, he doesn't do a very good job of him.
Okay.
He's going to lower the bar. Okay, hang on. You ready?
Well, I don't think it's inevitable. It probably will. It possibly will. It could be at a very small level, or it could be at a larger level. Whatever happens, we're totally prepared. We have the.
He's leaving himself a lot of wiggle room.
That's right.
Best people in
Sounds
the world.
Sounds like one of your drops.
You see that from the study. We have the best prepared people, the best people in the world. Congress is willing to give us much more than we're even asking for. That's nice for a change. But we are totally ready, willing, and able.
Okay, there you go. Okay. All righty.
There's one more cut where they asked him about the stock market.
Oh, okay. You have it? Did you put that in? You want me to put that in? Oh, here it is. Stock market took a hit.
Well, I really think the stock market, of something I know a lot about, I think it took a hit maybe for two reasons. I think they look at the people that you watched debating last night and they say if there's even a possibility that can happen, I think it really takes a hit because of that. And it certainly took a hit because of this. And I understand that also because of supply chains and various other things and people coming in. But I think the stock market will recover. The economy is very strong. The consumer is the strongest it's ever been. Our consumers are incredible. They're incredible. That's why we're doing well and other countries have not. Even before the virus, we're doing great. Other countries have not been doing great. Our consumer is very, very strong, very powerful economically.
Okay, there you go. He should have said everything's on sale. Take advantage of that. Right?
Well, I think he did, or was it Larry Kudlow? I mean, they were giving...
Probably Kudlow said everything's on sale right now.
It drops a thousand. He says, hey, look at the bright side. No.
The Wall Street Journal has a really interesting piece today. Why the big investors have to sell. The guys that handle the most amount. Because they are the ones that can get fired. And they are the ones that take the heat from it. So when the market starts to drop, they immediately move out to cash. They sell everything.
Okay,
so you see big dumps. Guys that are handling millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of accounts. Right?
Okay, now when you say guys, aren't these institutions that are handling?
Well, there's institutions buying, but somebody makes the choice for a sell. Get out, get out, get out, get out. So these are the institutions that are run by human beings, and they are the ones that are handling on pensions and stuff, move to a cash position or move to something safe, move over
because
to a bond.
Because they can't afford to miscalculate.
Well, they just, as it starts to drop, you've got to stop because they said you when one get fired.
So they're the by far the most conservative investors.
Oh yeah,
because they have so much at stake.
So much at stake, and they're handling all of these accounts. So they said those are the guys that get out, and then you see they all follow one another.
Yeah,
boom, 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 boom. It comes crashing down,
and that's where the John Curleys of the world come sweeping in.
And don't read their text message to their broker, or then end up stumbling into it. I Mr. Magooed that one, I'll tell you. That is some sweet news. And you told me not to look.
That's right. I did indeed.
At Apple.
At Apple. Because you'd already made the mistake or
said
the brilliant farsighted purchase. And so I didn't want you to have a stroke while we're still doing the show.
Fletcher Applegate, my billionaire friend, said nibble, nibble, nibble. Just nibble, nibble. Take small bites. Right now, the market going down. Take little bites.
$30,000. Not a nibble.
I didn't. If you don't were listening, I said to my broker, "Hey, let's buy Apple. It's on sale, right? And get $3,000."
Yeah.
Writes back. Putting an order in for $30,000.
Yeah.
I don't look at that because I'm a 36,000 foot guy.
That's right.
Right?
What's another zero or two?
Oh, my God. I would poop my pants. Well, anyway, it worked out okay.
But apparently it did.
But Fletcher Applewood said, no, I said nibble.
Yeah, I know.
Little bites.
Oh, Fletcher, what does he know?
He don't know anything. All right, so the market will bounce back again. That's what the president says. Don't panic anybody. All right, good. By the way, the thing I mentioned that what Barack Obama did on, I think it was the 24th of October or something like that, 2014. Remember the nurse that was in down the southeast somewhere, in Georgia, whatever. She got the Ebola virus. I thought she might have had the Ebola virus because she got it from Mr. Duncan. Mr. Duncan died of the Ebola virus. She was a Vietnamese nurse. And then they finally let her out. She was going to be okay. She passed through the 12 or 14 day. Remember this whole thing?
Quarantine.
Did you know that Time Magazine named the Ebola virus sort of healthcare field as the people of the year?
Oh, is that right?
Yes, that's how big of a deal this was, right? Okay, so the nurse, the young nurse, then went to the White House and got hugged by the president. It was his way of saying, look at this. Mm-hmm. See, she's okay.
She's
we got this thing all under control. Okay. So the president should go around hugging people. There's only 14 of them. There's one who's pretty sick.
That's right.
That's the guy you need to hug.
He should hug. We have the first guy here. He should go hug the guy from Everett.
But he doesn't like touching people, so that's part of the problem. Amy Clancy from Cairo 7 reviews and talks about the fact that the Metro bus apparently doesn't do the best job when it comes to disabled people of sort of locking them in when they get on the bus if they're in a wheelchair or need some sort of an assistance.
This rider broke a leg when his wheelchair suddenly lurched forward on the Rapid Ride A line. The complaint the Kent man filed with King County Metro includes an X-ray of his fractured leg and alleges the driver stopped abruptly, causing his leg to hit the seat in front of him. This disabled veteran was violently thrown to the floor. And this rider suffered a head injury when her wheelchair suddenly toppled over. All of these surveillance videos and many others were obtained by Cairo 7 after we filed a public disclosure request with King County. The videos show that Metro buses aren't always safe.
This is really losing something on radio, isn't it?
Always something, yes. I've got to say, the video is pretty spectacular, might be the wrong word, but it's really
jarring.
Jarring, yeah.
Yes, because you realize that the person is unable to catch themselves.
Yes.
The bus is making a left-hand turn or a right-hand turn, and they're just toppling over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a sense of like, oh, catch yourself, unable to catch themselves. And in one case, one of the people said to the driver, hey, you haven't locked me in. You don't have me in. Oh, no, you're fine, you're fine. Overall, I don't know how often this happens, but enough so that
51 times over a decade. So that, I mean, these are terrible things. And one person actually got a $3.85 million settlement because she was really hurt. I've ridden buses all my life. These things happen. Buses have to stop abruptly for all sorts of traffic reasons. Mm-hmm. This is not, it's not negligence at a high end. But still, it is really startling when it does happen. It's funny because just as the story, I first ran across the story yesterday. I was on the bus coming down, and the person was tied in so securely that she couldn't untie herself when she wanted to leave. And it took like 5 minutes for the bus driver to disconnect the sense. But yeah, that's not a lot of times. Considering how many hundreds of thousands of people ride.
Right.
But I was sympathetic. They said that one of the problems for if you're disabled, you not only, they think sometimes the bus drivers are rolling their eyes, passengers also roll their eyes because they realize, oh, if I'm commuting and I've got to be at work at 9 o'clock and now we've got two wheelchair people or something. And,
have you sensed that? Have seen that?
No, you
do.
And the thing is, what I know is that when I kind of said, oh, this is going to take some time, I just realized, there, but for the grace of God, go on.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd much rather be 5 minutes late than be that person that has to be. But it's like, yeah, and they just said they can just feel everybody on the bus kind of groaning. And I feel, so I'm really sympathetic to them. I don't know that Metro is any more negligent than anybody else, but I think this is a good reminder that, yeah, we have to be willing to give the driver time and the.
Do you have any patience for like a young person trying to get their bike in the bike rack thing?
They're the worst. They have this sense of entitlement.
Yeah, so they're always thinking, "Oh, I'm gonna put my bike on the bike rack, and I'm gonna be all bike racky." And
then they strut over to the door.
Right, they're all right, and that seems to be a problem. Hang on a second. Oops, hang on. I'm going down the wrong stairs. Hang on.
Jacob.
Yes.
Coming down. Off to you about when you are getting on the bus.
Step around the bike on your way down the stairs.
Yes, I see it there. So you go to get on that bus. You got your bike with you.
Yes.
And haven't you gotten it down yet to know when you put the thing down, you put the bike on, and then people don't get mad?
I thought I would have had it down by now, but I'm convinced that every bus has a different system for how that little rack comes down. There's a different like lever you've got to pull or a different thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I always feel like very stressed out.
Okay.
You do make eye contact with a bus driver, like, hey, I've got to do the thing, and then he stops for you. I've had one time I put it on the best of my ability.
Okay.
And then I walk on the bus, and the bus driver stops me like, you didn't do it right. And then someone just standing around had fixed it for me. Oh. So I was saying, it was very embarrassing.
Is it on the very front of the bus?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very front. And it takes two, right?
There's actually three lanes that you can put it on.
Yeah.
Good lordy. All right, so as the bus is pulling up, you're all anxious.
Yeah, and then you can just, it's obviously a different context, but I can feel, the 50 people seething at you. Because you are, I do it as fast as I can, but you still feel like you're slowing them down.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Try to straighten up down there, would you?
Why do we keep the millennial in the basement? That is so cliche.
No. He wants to be in the basement.
That's his thing. He's down there playing Atari.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll yell from the basement. One time I bonked my head twice on the side view mirror of the bus. I bonked my head twice. It was fortunate I was still wearing the helmet, so it's inert, but...
The bus driver kept going off the road because the mirror was bent.
We've heard from Russell Wilson. He's got advice to anybody out there. He says, listen, when it comes to this new contract, what's he telling everybody to do, Tom?
Just say no.
Oh, boy.
Do we have any sound? No. Okay. So right now.
Pretty much summed it up. We're moving on to the next story. Thanks a lot.
There's a big CBA, collective bargaining agreement. It happens every 10 years. It's a 10-year agreement. They've come up with a resolution of sorts where the players get 48.5% of all the profits instead of the 50% they wanted. And the executive committee that first drafted it in a close like 7-6 vote said, we think you should vote it down. Then it went to the player reps, and in a close vote, it went the other way, 17-14. So now it's open to all 2,000 football players in the NFL. Do you want to accept this agreement or not? With the little bit of extra money, they have to play a 17th game, and they get an extra playoff game. The individuals that only make like the bare minimum, which is like something like $450,000, they get like an extra $90,000 by playing that extra game. But most of the famous people in the NFL are against it, like Richard Sherman and now Russell Wilson. They say they've got enough money they can afford that. If you're only in the league for 3 years, do you want to take one for the team by saying
no? Does he have a plan B?
No.
I always say if you have a plan A, there's no need for a plan B.
There you go.
So clearly he doesn't have a plan B.
What if they say yes?
Yes, I know.
He should have out. All right, Tracy Taylor, what's going on with you? We're going to put you in the basement with young Jacob. You okay with that?
No, because it smells.
It does smell. It smells like root beer and cheese.
Ugh,
smells of Jacob.
Like somebody needs a weird air freshener. Yeah, Bucky's Auto Service Centers. You know how to fix that car. That's right. They got 16 locations. They've been around for 50 years. Listen, her car breaks down. You know where she's taking it? Bucky's. Who am I talking about? Ring the bell.
They even have cars 50 years ago.
Yeah,
it was Bucky's fixing wagons, Conestoga wagons.
50 years ago, most of my cars are 50 years old. All right, Arbel, apparently you have taken a yoga class where you were the only person.
Yeah, and that's not just because...
The music stopped so suddenly, they decided it was going to be more interesting than it actually was. Let me try that again. Hang on a second, you ready?
Yeah.
Great show, so you took a yoga class. Okay.
If you're going to criticize my skills.
No, it just dropped out.
It's like musical chairs.
I'm tuning
or like
in
a cakewalk.
And tuning out.
All right. You took a yoga class. You were the only one there.
Yoga class.
Yeah. Wow. Sorry, now I'm being mean to you. What is going on? It's contagious criticizing people. Yeah. So
why is this interesting?
I'm going to tell you why it's interesting. Yeah. Everything I say is interesting. Ask my mom. So there is this new yoga studio in Seattle, and it's called Sanctuary. And when I first read about it, I was like, oh, God. Because
like most of us right now.
Yeah. And you don't even know what it's about yet. You're already rolling your eyes. So you take the classes by yourself. You go into the studio. You put a code in when you get to the door. I did this for the story. Mm-hmm. I lived this.
Okay.
I'm like a method actor for reporting.
Experiential reporting.
Uh-huh. So you beep, 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 beep. And then you go upstairs, and it's a Himalayan pink salt colored stairs to start your relaxing experience.
Do you buy all that Himalayan salt stuff that went in? Okay. You know what that is, Tom?
But she's talking.
It's this pink salty sort of rock thing, and apparently it bonds with the carbon or something in the air, and then the salt gives off something in the air, and they're supposed to do something to you?
That's exactly right.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Go on.
You sound like Trump talking about the coronavirus.
Do something to you. Go ahead.
By the way, at Sanctuary, no one has the coronavirus.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
So you go upstairs, and it's very soothing, and then you have what's called a docent, which in other people is called the front desk person, and they tell you to take your shoes off, and you go in your own private suite where there is a bathroom attached with lots of fancy products that I sprayed everywhere, and I mean everywhere on my body. Uh-huh. I used every single product because I was like, it's free. That's what my body sounded like before I sprayed.
Okay.
Now it sounds like this. And there's no teacher. So one whole wall of the room, they project a class. So before you get there, you go onto the app and you choose what class you want to do. If you want to see a scene in Mexico or a jungle in Morocco, you decide if you want aromatherapy in the room, what the temperature is going to be, what kind of music you want. If you don't want music, you make all these decisions. You get a special blend of tea. And then you do the class by yourself. And then after the class, you have the room for 30 minutes. So you can, as they said, meditate or journal or use Instagram in a serene environment. And I thought before I did this, oh, this is so Seattle.
Yeah.
A city full of introverts who don't like to talk to each other, who can't even be in a room together silently stretching. You have to be alone in this room. And then I did it and I sprayed myself with everything and I was like, oh yeah, baby, I get it now.
What do you get? Why is it better or different?
Well,
I mean, I know you know it's different because you're all by yourself.
Yeah, that's nice.
Nobody to talk to.
Well, here is, I will play a cut from somebody who goes there on why they like it. This is Seattle's Christine McHugh.
I would never admit that I compare myself to people in classes, but I do. I did belong to a studio for a while that I stopped going to primarily because even though I'm like super in shape, I felt like I was out of shape compared to some of the people in there. I was a little intimidated by it. And here I don't have the intimidation factor.
So some people don't like the comparison. Some people don't like to race to class to try to get a space for their mat. And you're doing yoga pretty close alongside other people. But other people just like the fact that you can be alone and actually have quiet time. So what I was thinking is, in this age today of social media and phones and all of this, all of the messages and all of the articles are, we need to connect. We need to reconnect. What if you don't want to reconnect all the time? Like, do you have to talk to everybody? Like, do you always have to be around people? Sometimes people just want to be by themselves. And when they're downward dogging, you're doing another thing. Oh, my God. I've been doing yoga for 10 years, and I can't even think of another pose.
You wish.
So, warrior two.
But so this must be infinitely more expensive.
Yeah, baby.
Okay.
That's why I had to use all the products because I had to soak it up. It's $50 for a private class.
And what would a normal yoga class cost?
I would say on the high end, maybe 22.
Okay.
And on the low end, maybe 12.
But isn't the whole reason you do yoga so that you can compare yourself to others? Isn't that part
of it? That's John's life.
I think for some people, not in yoga, but in fitness classes, you do need to
see other people. You see people doing the moves and you see them looking around and they're getting all judgy with their $200 worth of Lululemon on. Yeah, they're judgy.
I don't feel that. I think it depends on your studio. I choose to go to a studio where people are older and schleppier instead of a studio where people have taut bodies and
well, that woman
nice
said that
clothes.
She goes there because she doesn't like going to other classes because
yeah.
she doesn't want to. Because you do, you having taken yoga,
yeah.
you're constantly comparing yourself because you look over at somebody. There's this person who's in the perfect position, and there they are doing some sort of warrior pose, or they're doing the goat or whatever else it is. Or
I don't think there's a goat.
Okay, whatever.
There is a frog.
Yes,
and a dog.
Double eagle.
No.
Oh, those are coins you can buy later.
Golf.
Okay.
Jacob, do you have something
I have
to say?
Question. Thank you, Rachel. I've taken a total of one yoga class, so I feel qualified to weigh in on
as
this.
As a white man, you're going to tell us how to yoga.
So
perfect. The
main appeal to me, or one thing I did like about it, is the woman at the front of the class telling me when I was doing it wrong. You're just basically watching a YouTube video, aren't you? I mean, why not just stay home?
That's what I thought. Good question. Thought, you know, why would you pay this much? Exactly. So they filmed their own videos with yoga instructors that they knew, but I don't know. That is a good question.
Okay.
I think, Rachel.
And what a stump her there.
Well, you know what I mean? It's
that's
like,
terrific.
Who knows why?
Really
I
nice.
Think actually for me, though, if I don't prepay for my workouts, I will skip them. And I've tried to work out at home and do yoga at home, and I never finish the class or the video. But when you're in a studio, you kind of have to finish because you're already there and you paid for it. So I think some people like to, for yoga, go into a new environment. And especially in this room, it's kind of dim and there's aromatherapy and there's music. So you don't get distracted. Like when I'm doing yoga on the floor at my house, first of all, my cat jumps on my back or she goes underneath, or I start picking lint out of the carpet and it's very distracting. Or
is that all part of it?
Do housework.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like namaste with a little vacuuming on the side. So I think it's about like going to a new
place. But when you take a class with a whole bunch of people, you're not communicating with them. You are in your own sort of zen weird thing.
Oh, you're communicating with them.
How?
silently. Spiritually.
You're taking a yoga class, huh?
Look at me. Do you think I've ever taken a yoga class?
She's just right.
We should do it as a team-building retreat.
No, we
need to go away for the weekend, guys, so we can make the show better. John, you want to come?
No.
That makes two of us.
I'll go, Rachel.
Thanks, Tracy.
No.
I'll do the spread eagle pose.
Oh, boy.
All righty.
Double spread eagle.
Wow!
I never realized how many people are Catholic until Ash Wednesday, right? And then how many Catholics are there that didn't get the ashes? They were too busy doing community service or something.
Happy Ash Wednesday, everybody.
Is that really a thing? Happy Ash Wednesday?
No, well, Ash Wednesday is a thing.
I know it is. You don't go around wishing everybody a happy Ash Wednesday.
Well, it's a good way to remind people this is the beginning, first day of 40 days of Lent.
Isn't it ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and so you shall return?
Yeah.
Is that the actual thing they say?
Mm-hmm.
So I like I like the bottom of the chalice because it's not as much ashes. It seems like most of these people have been getting the top of the pile.
I'm going to be on TV. I want to have all the world to see.
All righty. How to change anyone's mind, Tom? How do you change somebody's mind, according to the Wall Street Journal? By the way, both you and Jacob, when you brought the story up, you looked at me like, oh, this is like some dumb thing you would try to do. No. Yeah. You said this about me in accusatory manner. Like, this seems like something you would learn and then use and then talk about.
Why so defensive,
because
John?
Because there are parts of it that seem to be a little misleading.
Misleading? They felt very Curly-esque. When you want to convince somebody to do something,
yes,
there's apparently a human innate response to not want to do it.
Yes, I know.
That it's a natural built-in thing. If John wants me to do something, I don't know about that. I'm going to resist it, even if it seems good on the surface. Mm-hmm. So what they say is, when you're trying to convince somebody to change their mind, do not force it on them. Do not push them. Come on, John, there are three reasons why you should never vote for Trump again. Mm-hmm. Don't do it that way. Instead, what you want to do is you want to kind of lower barriers. Now, this is applicable to anything and everything in general. But instead of telling John, says, listen, don't vote for Trump. You have to vote for Bernie Sanders. I'll say, no, John, you don't have to vote for Trump. You have all these options. Look, you've got 24 Democrats. You can only have to pick one of those Democrats. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, I do kind of like Bloomberg. He's kind of like a Republican. And you go, okay, that's good. And once you've dropped the barrier to say, I don't have to vote for Trump, I could vote for a Democrat, Bloomberg. And then you watch them enough and you realize, oh, well, if Bloomberg gets knocked out, but I've already crossed the Rubicon of thinking about an option. So if you give people multiple options, they're much more apt to choose one of those options.
As opposed to
saying, don't vote for Trump. I don't care what you do, but just do not vote for Trump.
Because you're taking away something from
agency.
Somebody, right?
Yes.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay. So that's one thing.
Now, but there is a thing called a push, which is you can get the person to make a decision the way you want them to make the decision by pushing them.
Okay, now this is the curly philosophy of life.
How do you do it?
Or, I mean, a technique.
What a push is.
Yeah.
Right, so you're gently nudging them in the direction of the answer that you, the choice that you want them to make. Mm-hmm. In fact,
it's called a trap.
No, it's not a trap.
Okay.
The Obama administration did a whole thing on nudging. Did you remember this whole thing?
Oh, yeah, nudging. Okay, that's what you're talking about.
A nudge or a push.
A nudge.
Okay.
I got you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So another option in this article is to alleviate uncertainty. This is the kind of thing that reminded me of you because you love these kinds of things. There was this experiment about something called uncertainty tax. People were said, here's a $50 gift certificate. How much will you pay for a $50 gift certificate? And they got people to say about $26. Mm-hmm. That's as most as someone would get. And they said, okay, now for $26, you can get this lottery ticket. And this lottery ticket will either give you a $50 gift card or a $100 gift card, and the percentage of people that are willing to do it dropped. Even though it was a better deal, the worst they could do would be what they're willing to pay. Mm-hmm. But because there's uncertainty involved, they panicked, and they were willing to only pay $16, a 40% drop in what they're willing to pay. He says, so what does this mean? We don't like uncertainty. And they give examples of cloud storage. People, when the cloud first came along, nobody quite knew what it was. Uh-huh. You got Dropbox saying, hey, you know, for this cheap amount, we can store your stuff for you. I don't know. So what Dropbox did is offer a bunch of free stuff. They said, listen, you know, we will give you X amount of, you know, gigabytes or whatever for free. And then you got used to it. And they say, well, do you like that? Yeah, it's fantastic.
Okay, now pay $13.
And now pay double or whatever. The same thing with Acura. They didn't know how to market Acura, so they gave out free Acura cars to anybody in this the high-end W hotel chain. Then they got used to driving the Acura and go, yeah. there's my uncertainty's gone. I like the driving the Acura.
That's the puppy dog sale.
Those are two of the approaches to get somebody to do something that you want them to do that they don't think they want to do.
I have a crazy experiment that I do all the time at auctions involving raffle tickets, and it's always amazing to me the people that don't take advantage of it.
Yes, is that right?
I mean, I'll tell you about it.
Okay, sounds good.
That's when you and I'll talk.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Oh, that again.
That's right. Oh, is everything got to be public? Tracy Taylor?